Now, in the last hour, just before the news there at 10 o'clock, we talked about how nearly 4,500 council houses lie empty around Ireland amid the housing crisis. Well, what about a crisis of a different type, but still in relation to houses and apartments? Because the owners of Celtic Tiger-era apartments with defects have asked that the government moves quickly amid concerns that residents could be kicked out of their homes before Christmas. A working group's report, which was published in July, found that 100,000 apartments and duplexes built between 1991 and 2013 had defects, with fire safety being the most prevalent issue. Well, on the line is Barbara Allen. She's a spokesperson for the Not Our Fault campaign. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Owen. Thank you.
The number of homes that may be affected here, Barbara, by one or more defects could range between 50 and 80%, according to that report, with the overall remediation cost likely to range between 1.6 and 2.5 billion. And I know that yesterday, speaking up in Dublin, apartment owners were saying that the detail of a redress scheme was urgently needed to end the uncertainty for homeowners. Tell us a bit more about what's going on here.
Well, that's it, Owen. First and foremost, this is a nationwide issue. It is defects in build, with water ingress and with fire issues that have been identified by a working group that were put together by our government when this started to come to light a couple of years ago. The working group came back around, I think it was around the end of July, early August. I'm open to correction on the date. But their findings, among other things, found particularly that there is approximately 100,000 homes. These are apartments and duplexes that were built between 1991 and 2013. And the reason why those dates are significant is because it was during that period that builder developers were allowed to self-certify their own builds. So effectively, the watchdogs were called off. They were able to snag their own buildings. They were able to do their own snag lists and to certify that everything was fine and dandy. Obviously, at the time, there were grave warnings from opposition TDs that this was going to leave the whole industry open to all sorts of abuse, or, you know, even accusations, shall we say, of abuse. But 20 years on, we have found out that categorically there are serious, serious defects, particularly around build. As I said, water ingress and fire issues are major at the moment. And it's nationwide. This is not a Dublin thing.
And when those defects were found then, and I know you have experienced this yourself, Barbara, so you might tell us about your own experience. When the defects were identified, it was essentially told then to the occupiers of those apartments, well, you're going to have to put your hand in your pocket here.
Yeah, eventually. I suppose it's hard for people who don't own an apartment or duplex to actually really understand. We don't own the building. We effectively buy the space within the building. We own what's called from the paint on the walls inwards, okay? So I don't own the walls, I don't own the balcony, I don't own the windows, I don't own the front door of my own property per se. That is all common property, and it belongs to the OMC, which stands for Owner Management Company. Now, I'm a member of the Owner Management Company, but I'm one voice in Hunter's Wood, the 649 units, so I'm one of 649. So, you know, my say individually doesn't go very far. So when initially the first thing that came to light in Hunter's Wood was that there was a problem with the balconies. They hadn't been built to the standards that was, you know, the regulations for 2002 when my particular building was built. And they, we were told via our management agents and our board of directors that they needed to be removed for safety's sake.
Mm. Just to clarify as well, this is Hunter's Wood in Dublin.
Hunter's Wood in Dublin. And I know there are other apartment complexes around the country who have had been identified with balcony defects. The problem was they were built wooden trusses into wooden buildings, and they were cantilevered with no support. So, I mean, seriously, I mean, you know, without being a builder, you've got to think there's something maybe not so, you know, strong about that. It's not the best idea. But anyway, they self-certified that they were safe and they got away with it until they were then, years later, properly inspected and told, well, actually, no, that's not safe. It's not a safe building practice at all. So our balconies came down, with the result we're now living in buildings, in our apartments and our duplexes, where the balcony has been removed. So therefore, the building is no longer fit for purpose. You know, you have to have outdoor space. You have to have a second place of egress in order to make a building like that fit for purpose. And we don't have that at the moment. So we're stuck in a situation where we can't sell, we technically can't rent, and officially we shouldn't be living in the building because it's not safe and it's not fit for purpose.
Hmm.
Since that happened in Hunter's Wood, we then discovered that there were massive problems around fire, to retard fire, to get more time to get out, all sorts of fire effort to isolate one unit from the next unit, so it can't go from through the ceiling to the unit above or through the floor to the unit below and sideways. And none of it was done. Hmm. It was certified that it was done, but it wasn't done.
Sam Doran, he is living just over the border, actually, up the road in Parkwest.
Yeah,
in Dublin. He was of the Crescent Apartments. He said that each of the apartments in his duplex were asked to pay a levy of €68,000 for remedial works. He said that until each of the 232 apartments have been fixed, he cannot sell his apartment. That's where you're calling now
We're in exactly the same situation. Yeah. We were levied, first of all, we were told it would be levied for the balconies, which were around 20,000 is the figure that was bandied around. We never got a full figure, because actually what they did was, when they realised it was fire defects, they moved on. So they've left our buildings now effectively with no balconies and with no necessarily plan, shall we say, to restore them. Now, Hunter's Wood, luckily enough, we have a new board, which we voted in around the end of June, who are incredibly proactive and have immediately started to liaise, you know, one-to-one board member with people like the fire officer, with people like hopefully kind of insurance companies. And 'cause we've to pay insurance on buildings that are essentially no longer insurable. We have all these things hanging in the air. We started off, as I said, with a levy of about 20,000. And then we were told the fire issues were even more important. So even if we paid a levy for our balconies, they couldn't guarantee it would be ring-fenced and used for the balcony. And they then told us that, this was when we removed our board in June, that evening we were told there was a levy of 15,000 to be imposed immediately, which would be the start of somewhere between 45,000 to 65,000. Now, none of those figures were complete. They had no idea. This appeared to be an element of sort of guesswork with a 30% contingency built in, until they opened up the place and had a really good look. And we were expected to put this money forward immediately. Like, this was an immediate levy of 15,000. So the residents of Hunter's Wood voted, A, to remove their board so that we could actually find out a bit more about it, and B, not to vote on anything until we had more information.
Okay, of the 100,000 homes that were identified, you feel as though quite a considerable number of those homes don't know that they're affected yet.
Yeah, we reckon that there's at least 95% of the people who are affected in those 100,000 homes don't realise they are. We did a little press conference yesterday in Boswell's Hotel to promote an event that we're having on the 19th of November. I'll talk about that in a moment. But two of the camera operators there, one journalist, one camera operator, were horrified. They stood there saying, I live in an apartment and I don't know anything. We were saying, well, you should. Mm. And they were both apartments that were built around the 2000s, around that year. So they're most definitely in the loop. Whether or not their builders were the ones who self-certified that everything was okay, it remains to be seen. But what we're asking people out there is, will you please start asking the questions? If you haven't been told anything about a fire report, if you haven't been told anything about a levy, you need to start asking your management agent and you need to start asking your OMC, does this affect me? Okay, me, make it personal.
Yeah.
How am I going to be asked to, you know, pay for a levy? What are your plans? And your OMC should be able to come straight back and say, we're not involved, so happy campers, or, well, yes. And then you say, well, why wasn't I told? Where's my fire report? I want to see this. Every individual who lives in an apartment or a duplex, who owns an apartment or a duplex, is entitled to that information. It was withheld from us But we finally got ourselves in a situation where we could get it.
Okay, as I mentioned there from the outset, you're calling on the government now to chip in and pay this redress. Have you had any response from the government or indication that they will do that?
We're calling on the government to pay 100% redress. None of this is our fault. We all put our hands in our pocket and paid market value for our apartments at the time. We all had them properly surveyed. We had lenders, we had insurers, we had all of the professionals who said this was okay, this was a good buy. And there's no point in coming back to us years later and saying, well, actually, no, there's a problem. It's too late for us at that stage. We've already made our investment. Mm. As a taxpayer, I put my hand in my pocket and paid willingly, by the way, for mica and pyrite. And the next one that comes along, I will again willingly do it. So we believe we are entitled to and should receive 100% redress on any funds that need to be put there to make our buildings right again, to fix our buildings. I don't even own the building again. I'm going to go back to that. I don't own the building. I own the space that's within it that I bought in good faith.
Have you had any indication from the government that they're going to pay it?
We have had positive feedback, certainly from a lot of the individual TDs, very much from the opposition TDs, a little bit lukewarm from the actual sitting government TDs. But that said, we have had good answers to questions posed to our Taoiseach, to An Taoiseach, who have all said there has to be a comprehensive response to this. There must be. What we need is, we need this now, Owen. I'm living in a situation now where I don't know whether my building's going to be insured on the 31st of December. I don't know that. Mm. We've already in Hunter's Wood paid out thousands and thousands and thousands to have balconies assessed, removed, to have fire reports done, all of that. We paid out thousands already. And I know there are thousands of house owners and apartment owners around the country who've already paid levies. So we need to know that not only will we be paid going forward, but there will be some sort of retrospective, all-inclusive payment on this. You know, you can't just do one apartment and then skip the one beside it and then do the one beside it because the one in the middle didn't pay. It doesn't work that way.
Okay.
We are multi-development or multi-unit developments. So the development has to be done. My building has to be done so that my apartment is included in this.
A public conference is taking place on the 19th of November.
The 19th of November in the Plaza Hotel in Tala at 1 p.m. The reason we picked the Plaza was for access to the Lewis, which takes in Houston Station and Connolly Station. So literally the Plaza is only a couple of minutes walk from the Tala Lewis stop. And that really was the reason for that particular location being chosen. So it really is, this is nationwide. So anybody who wants to come along from outside Dublin, you're very, very easy to come in into Houston or into Connolly and pick up a Lewis straight up to the Plaza Hotel.
Okay, so that's happening on the 19th of November between 1 and 4 o'clock in the Plaza Hotel in Tala in Dublin, and Barbara Allen of the Not Our Fault campaign going through those issues there and calling on the government to give that redress, 100% redress. Barbara, thanks for joining us and for speaking
thanks,
out.
Owen. Thank you so much. Thanks a million.
Thanks indeed. And as Barbara said as well, if you're in an apartment or a duplex, maybe just ask a couple of questions. Check it out and see whether or not, if it was built particularly in the years between 1991 and 2013, ask your management company to get that relevant information, because as Barbara mentioned, up to 95% of people don't know that they are affected by this, and obviously time is of the essence here. Thanks, Barbara.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
And you're very welcome back. Keep your messages coming in to us, 0833 97 97 97, text and WhatsApp. You can call us 045 898 999 or you can email studio@kfmradio.com. Now, staff shortages and software problems are the main factors behind a deterioration of bus services, as well as continuing inaccuracies in real-time passenger information that's available at bus stops and on smartphones. That's what the two main bus operators in Dublin will tell an Oireachtas committee today. In a submission to the Joint Committee on Transport, Dublin Bus acknowledges that the accuracy of real-time passenger information has deteriorated in recent months, while Go Ahead Ireland, in an opening statement to TDs and senators, the company's managing director Andrew Edwards will say that we acknowledge there have been issues affecting our services. We apologise to customers who have been negatively affected. Mr Edwards cites staff shortages as the main reason for the issues, adding that the past 2 years have been extremely challenging for the transport sector, and they're appearing before the Oireachtas committee today. Well, it's not just in around Dublin that is experiencing those issues, because as we've documented here previously, the 120 bus and the 139 bus in and around the Clane, Allenwood, Maynooth, Selbridge area is often late, not showing up at all, or indeed full when it does show up. Social Democrats councillor Aidan Farrelly hosted a public meeting at the Westgrove Hotel last night. It was attended by his party colleagues Nuala Killeen and Bill Clear, as well as by a considerable number of people from the local area. I went along and got the views of councillor Aidan Farrelly and Nuala Killeen after the meeting.
I'm really glad that we went ahead with this meeting, because the sentiment in the room was the culmination of 2 years of frustration, of heartbreak, of no trust that the assurances that have been given by the service provider with the 120 specifically, people don't trust that yet. And I think that's a fair position to take, because people have been let down consistently since this operator took over 2 years ago. And I think tonight was very worthwhile for people to have the opportunity to share, to understand that they're not alone, and that it wasn't just a talking shop, that we actually have something of a future action plan now as well. I think it's very positive. So overall, I think it really was worthwhile.
Number of issues raised, particularly regarding the 120 bus, the fact that it's full, sometimes it doesn't show up on time, sometimes it doesn't show up at all. And that's particularly affecting Clane, Allenwood, Prosperous, those kind of areas. And this is something that's been happening on a consistent basis.
From day one. And I remember before we took, or before Go Ahead took the route, assurances were given with regards to double-decker buses at peak times only. Like, the double-deckers would be there, and that's not the case. If it shows up, it's either showing up full, like you say, leaving people, and it's not like another one's going to come in 10 minutes. You know, you're talking an hour before the next one comes, and if you're a commuter or if you're trying to get to school, it's not going to work for you. The cost was an issue. There was very little positivity when it comes to the feedback of the service. But in general, the frustration comes from it's consistently inconsistent. And while we might see a day or two where that kind of ebbs and flows and gets a bit better, people can't trust it. I think the number one facet of public transport service is you need to be able to rely on it in order to use it.
That's the 120 bus. Regarding the 139, then, Nuala Killeen, similar issues, but maybe a little bit more positive with the response that you've got from the NTA in the last couple of weeks.
We were pleased that the service would be added to, but there's still an unmet need of people left behind at bus stops, particularly those at commuting times and school traffic times. There's a lot of students travelling to Maynooth University that are being left behind. They're missing, we heard here tonight, they're missing classes, appointments, medical appointments, jobs. One lady mentioned she couldn't take a job because the bus was only 2 hours. It would be really interesting. It's obviously a very popular and well-used route, and it would be really interesting to see a further investment in this route. It goes through Maynooth, it goes through Leixlip, it goes up to Blanchardstown, and then it returns all the way back down to Naas. It follows a destinations that people want to go. So I'd like to see an enhancement of this, especially in the morning times and in the peak evening time services. We hear stories about people having to wait behind for an hour or two after work so that they can wait for the next bus. If we really want to get people off the road and back onto the buses, we need to build trust, we need to enhance that service. The 139 is a popular service, it crosses a multitude of areas, and I really think that the NTA could implement a quick win by doubling that service overnight.
Aidan, that's an interesting point that Nuala made, and some of the towns that she's mentioned there, Selbridge, Clane, Leixlip, Maynooth, Naas. These are big towns, and to have such a small number of buses and small buses going through the towns is not acceptable.
It's another example, in my opinion, of infrastructure always coming generations after the population boom. And we're seeing, I think this is what's happening in Clane right now, where in Naas, Selbridge, Leixlip, you see a greater level of public transport infrastructure. Still, many would argue it's not there yet in terms of meeting the need, but Clane is generations behind. And like Nuala says, there are ways to do this that's not complicated. It's not a complex issue. You put the buses on when the needs are there. You see some of those 139 services going through Clane 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the day. They're empty. Yet we have a massive need at peak times. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to solve these issues. And I think we've come away from this evening with a really interesting proposal to gather again, but as an action group, that let's get community members around the table consistently to log these issues, to do away with some of the narrative out there that Clane is well served by public transport. It's unequivocal. Clane and anywhere west of Clane is abjectly failed by public transport, and it's up to us to prove that now.
The timetable is one issue, Nuala. Do you think maybe the routes could be looked at as well? We heard one woman saying, why do Naas and Clane share a bus service? And particularly for college, if you're leaving Naas, travelling through Salins, by the time the bus gets to Clane, it's full. So people are left on the side of the road in Clane. Maybe we should have a bus starting around this area, going to the likes of Maynooth, because when people get off the bus then in Maynooth, it's nearly empty going on to Blanchardstown. So maybe the route needs to be looked at again.
I think it was an innovative route when it was put on. I think it's an incredibly important point you raise. The routes need to follow desire lines. Clane should have buses starting there in addition to buses starting at the end of the route. You should have more buses at the end of the route. You should pick up really in Naas, then a second bus service starting Clane, because the NTA are not measuring the unmet need, the people left behind. They're scanning the tickets to see how many people are on the bus, not counting how many people are left behind. We'd have similar problems in Leixlip, where we advocated years ago for additional bus services to be put on, because by the time the bus from Maynooth came to Leixlip, it was full. So that was public campaigning, and that was people coming together. And I think that the people who spoke up about their shock that the bus services didn't start in Clane had moved to Clane in the last 3 and 5 years, like a lot of other people from, you know, more towards Dublin, maybe Leixlip, Maynooth, Selbridge, and they are absolutely appalled at the state of public transport. They're absolutely shocked. They thought public transport wasn't great in Selbridge or Leixlip, and they cannot believe how bad it is in Clane. And I think if everybody works together, if we record the unmet need, if we record the people left behind, demonstrate that there's a demand for the service, it's not a waste of money. It's not a waste of money to take students and people to college or work every day.
And Aidan, just to finish up then, you asked the NTA, Go Ahead Ireland and Minister Eamon Ryan to attend this meeting tonight, all declined to come, but I understand that you're going to bring that information forward now to the relevant authorities. So ultimately, where do we go from here and what's the next step?
Yeah, I think there's two roads really to pursue now. I think in terms of next step, with regards to the Oireachtas, I think we need to get these issues collated and brought to the attention of the Joint Oireachtas Committee for Transport again. That's where we got some success the last time. So I'll be writing to them with a collation of this information tonight and asking them as a Transport Committee to discuss this and to discuss this directly with the NTA and with Go Ahead Ireland. We also have a date of Friday week where I will be meeting with the Managing Director of Go Ahead Ireland, and I'll again bring these issues with regards to the 120 to him and seek kind of assurances on that. But more importantly, I think in the short term, there was an energy in the room tonight that they can take the ball. And as much, I think, as it's important for us to facilitate these conversations, the next steps now, it's as much the people in the room tonight that are going to take that on. So I'd expect in the early 2023, we'll hear something in terms of a campaign group being formed.
Social Democrats councillor Aidan Farrelly speaking there at that public meeting in the Westgrove Hotel. We also heard from Selbridge Leixlip councillor Nuala Killeen. Still to come between now and 11 o'clock, Nursing Homes Ireland says a new scheme to support nursing homes is completely ill fit for purpose, and motions and issues from the Clane Maynooth Municipal District meeting.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Now, Nursing Homes Ireland have said that a new government scheme to support nursing homes in the country is completely ill fit for purpose. I'm joined now by the Chief Executive of Nursing Homes Ireland, that is Tadhg Daly. You're very welcome, Tadhg.
Good morning, Ciara. Thank you.
Well, Tadhg, just to begin, if you can give me the main points from the government scheme before we get into NHI's reaction or feeling about the situation.
Yeah, well, I suppose ultimately we all know that we're in a period of unprecedented inflation right across the country. So we've had very good engagement with government over a long number of months since March of this year. And just on Sunday evening last, the government announced a scheme to deal with energy, and it was confined to energy only. And in effect, what they're proposing is that the differential between your energy bill in 2021 and 2022, that there would be a scheme of financial support that would recompensate, as it were, the nursing home for 75% of that increased cost, up to a maximum of €5,250 per month. But in reality, what we've seen is that many of our members are seeing, you know, 200 and 300% increase in their energy costs. I mean, clearly, nursing home care is 24/7. So the €5,250 limit per month goes nowhere near meeting the reality of the increased cost that people are experiencing right across the nursing home sector.
Tadhg, do you know how much on average nursing homes in Ireland are paying for their energy per month, would say, over the past 3 months, for example?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, it is, you know, it is a mixed bag because some people may have had, you know.
So do you have an average?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the average would be like the per kilowatt hour, which is the real cost, really, has gone from, I think, 17 cent per kilowatt hour to 43 cent per kilowatt hour. But in many cases, you know, the increase would be of the order of north of 10 and in some cases north of 20 to 25,000 euros per month of an increase. Now, clearly, over the last number of weeks, the weather has been, you know, more kind, I suppose, so the heating. But in a nursing home setting, you know, you do need regulated temperature all year round. So the increases, you know, will the €5,000 that's proposed is only a fraction of the actual increased cost that people are experiencing on a sector that's already under pressure, as we've seen with the large number of closures over the last number of months.
So the increase, this is just the increase, is between 20 to 25,000 euro on average per month in nursing homes across the country.
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends. I mean, what you have is we have some nursing homes that are, you know, 22 and 24 beds, right, up to a nursing home, 180 beds. So, you know, it's difficult to, within that range, you know, to be absolutely precise because, as I said, some people are in contract and may have a better deal. Others may be out of contract with their energy provider. Some people are obviously using gas. Others are electricity. Others are natural, you know, piped gas. So it is a very, I suppose, fluid situation, if you like. And we know across all businesses at the moment, you know, energy is eye-watering. You know, some businesses have the prospect of having to close for a day or maybe, you know, reduce hours. Clearly, nursing home care is 24/7. So what we've seen really is the increase in costs, the increase in energy usage, and the uncertainty around the energy market is creating a very unstable and a crisis right across nursing homes.
So you have called an emergency general meeting of the membership of Nursing Homes Ireland. What will be happening and when will that meeting be taking place?
Yeah, well, our meeting is on this Thursday in Kilkenny, and I suppose ultimately, you know, my phone hasn't stopped, I can assure you, over the last 24 hours since this was announced. So it is important. We're a membership organisation ultimately, so it's important that we get the feedback from our members in terms of their particular situation, what the outlook is like, because clearly we have an ageing population. We need more beds, so there is a risk of further closures. So we need to get the temperature, as it were, from our members, get feedback from them on, I suppose, what we can do as an organisation next in terms of our engagement. I mean, we won't be found wanting. We've always had good engagement with the department and indeed with Minister Butler more recently. But our concern now is that there is a lack of understanding that there is a real existential crisis to nursing home care. And until such time as that's understood and a series of measures put in to deal with A, energy, but B, the underlying issues around nursing home care, you know, we could be in a spiral where we're going to see more closures in the weeks and months ahead.
So this is a 10 million euro scheme announced by government on Sunday. How much would Nursing Homes Ireland like to see the government be investing into this? Because each nursing home can apply for up to, as you noted, it's 31,500. This is in vouched energy rises. They can claim for heating and electricity increases. It says here of up to 7,000 a month per 75% of the year on year cost increases. So that will be up to a maximum payment, as you have noted, of €5,250 per month. This is backdated to the 1st of July this year. Yes. So how much would you accept, I guess, as the chief executive of Nursing Homes Ireland, well, be enough that the government would invest in?
I suppose what I'd be looking at really is in terms of the fund that's set aside to support nursing homes. It's up to each individual nursing home in terms of its own pricing arrangements. And as I said, you know, there are differing sizes, different capabilities, and indeed some would be on better tariffs at the moment than others. But ultimately, when we saw the government announcing 110 million in the budget, to be honest, we would have expected somewhere in the region of 40 million of that 110 million to be set aside and ring fence for nursing home care. What we've seen is a quarter of that 10 million. So the 10 million is completely inadequate and very underwhelming.
Okay, just want to stop you there. So 110 million announced by the government. You would have liked to see 40 million go to energy. Where is the rest of that 100 million going?
Yeah, well, that 110 million was for services outside the HSE. So it was looking at disability centres, as I understood it, and some community groups that provide, you know, Meals on Wheels, for example, for care of the older person. So there was a total fund set aside by ministers Donoghue and McGrath of 110 million. But only 10 million has made its way in terms of this particular scheme for nursing homes, whereas we would have expected, as I say, a multiple of that. And we, you know, without putting you know, precise numbers on it, we would have expected at least 40 million of that 110 million to be set aside for nursing home care. I mean, nursing homes provide care to 26,000 older people right across the country, directly employ about 40,000 people. And, you know, given what we've seen over the year to date, with 16 closures, 500 beds, you know, we would have expected government to be much more alive to the crisis that's in the sector. So this is disappointing in terms of the quantum, but it's also very disappointing in terms of the message it's sending to the nursing home sector, is that somehow they don't care about the role of the private and voluntary sector.
You just mentioned it, 16 nursing homes have closed their doors to date this year. You have said it's an unprecedented emergency for nursing home care in Ireland. What does it mean for the care of individuals if enough money is not given to the sector, especially when it comes to the cost of increase in energy bills? Yes, it means closures, I'm sure, but what does it actually mean for residents? What does it mean for the future of our country?
Well, you've touched on a very important point here, because some people listening to your programme this morning would say he's talking about older people. And absolutely we are. But this has an impact across the health service, because it will mean that older people will not be able to get out of the acute hospitals, for example, into the care in the community. But ultimately, the big issue here is that if I'm an older person residing in a nursing home that's under threat at the minute and that is unviable, it means I have to leave my home. And I think people need to reflect on that, because that's what it means ultimately. It means that older people who have lived in a nursing home for maybe 2 months, 2 years, or maybe even longer, are being told effectively that this home is no longer viable and you have to move your home.
And Tadhg, not necessarily knowing where they can move.
Correct. And moving outside your community in many cases, because the ones that have closed have been in predominantly, but not exclusively, in rural Ireland. So it means, you know, maybe you mightn't see your family or your loved ones as frequently if it's further away from where you reside. You may be leaving, as Hikwa pointed out, your local general practitioner. So there's a number of legs to this and issues to this that I don't think have been fully thought through by government. And that's why when I say we're so disappointed, because failure to grasp this particular crisis will have long-lasting consequences, because the ones that have closed will unfortunately never reopen again.
Okay.
And it's also sending a signal to future capacity, is that, you know, this sector is unviable. And if you're thinking of, you know, becoming involved in the nursing home sector, this is a sector that's on its knees. That has a huge consequence for care of the older person.
Just have to wrap up here now. That emergency general meeting, it's taking place on Thursday. Where in Kilkenny and at what time?
Yeah, well, we're our members. It's a members only meeting, obviously, yeah, but it's in the Lyras Hotel in Kilkenny on Thursday, and you know what we'll be doing, obviously. But we're a responsible, professional organisation. We'll be meeting hopefully with the minister soon after, just to outline to her the depth of feeling on the ground among our members, and we'll be requesting government to respond favourably over the weeks and months ahead.
Okay, thank you very much for your time this morning. That is the Chief Executive of Nursing Homes Ireland on that emergency meeting being called for the membership of the organisation. They have said the new government scheme to support the nursing homes is completely ill fit for purpose. That is Tadhg Daly. Thank you.
Let's go back to local issues then. Labour councillor on the claim, Maynooth Municipal District, Angela Feeney joins us. Good morning, Angela.
Morning, Owen. Morning, listeners.
This is issues that you raised at the recent claim, Maynooth Municipal District meeting. And first of all, if we look at your motion, you were asking the council to engage with relevant stakeholders in Maynooth to create further permeability onto the Royal Canal Greenway.
Yeah, Owen. I mean, we had good news from the council recently that a contractor has been appointed to carry out the construction of the Maynooth Confey section of the Greenway. Actually, preparatory work started last week and the construction period is about 18 months. So this motion, Owen, was calling on the council to engage with the stakeholders in Maynooth that back onto the Greenway to create further permeability for walkers and cyclists onto the Canal Greenway. And the stakeholders, Owen, I'm thinking of are Tesco's, Carton Retail Park, Supervalue, the Glen Royal Hotel, even St. Patrick's College and the University. They all back onto the Greenway. And because I think this is a great opportunity to create a real cycling equivalent of an orbital route and reduce vehicle movements. So at the meeting, I was advised by the council officials to forward the suggestions to the active travel team in the council for consideration. So I've done that and I hope that they could be progressed, as in my view, it would be a real game changer for active travel, you know, and getting people out of their cars, especially for the shorter, you know, journeys to shops or to college.
You mentioned cycling there. Obviously, if people are using bikes, they'll need somewhere to put them. And you had a second question there looking for any planned community bike parking for residents in the area.
Yeah, more people, as you say, Owen, want to depend less on cars for local or shorter journeys. Not only is it better for the environment, but now it's costing so much more to run a car. However, safe and secure bicycle storage is key, especially I'm thinking, Owen, of people who live in terraced houses or apartments. They don't want to have to bring a bike indoors. And I've seen community storage in places like Stony Batter, and I've seen them abroad as well. So, and they're unobtrusive and they're safe. So the council said, while it has no plans at the moment to introduce community cycle parking schemes, it is engaging with the NTA and they're awaiting suggestions from, you know, with regard to a regional approach from the Greater Dublin Area to cycle sharing and associated infrastructure. So I welcome that response, Owen, and I know that they're looking for feedback from other local authorities where they ran this type of thing, and they will obviously feedback into what we'll do in Kildare.
Finally then, Angela, is there an issue of road safety on the Boreen Road in Strafan, and are the council doing anything about it?
Absolutely. I was disappointed, Owen, to hear that the council said there are currently no plans to carry out any major upgrade works on the road other than routine maintenance. So as I said at the meeting, it's unbelievable, Owen, really, that a road with such dangerously bad bends, a road that leads directly from the centre of the village, has been left without a path up to now. So I fully intend, Owen, bringing a motion again on this important issue of safety for the residents of Strafan.
Okay, Labour councillor on the claim, Maynooth Municipal District, that is Angela Feeney. Thanks for joining us, Angela, and a very good morning to you.